I just would like to pick up on what Sanjeev said. I noticed that all the Charles University aristocracy is gone, so we can put the rubber boots on and get into swing of things, meaning that we'll start talking about what is it that we would like to achieve. I also would like to, in my talk at least, give a little bit of background why we are working on what we are working on. And as you may expect, maybe there won't be many results. I hope results will be at the end, though we do have some results, but this talk will not be heavy on results. It will be more like heavy on whys rather than hows and what. To start with, I'd like to start with a little story, actually a couple of stories. The story is from Carl Sandburg, who was American poet, and he was also collecting wisdom of American people. And he had this story about the Native American person who meets the white man who at the time were taking over the country. And he asked, how come that you white people are coming here and taking everything over? And the white man looks at him and he says, well, you know, the story is this. This is how much the native you people know. And this is how we white people know. And that's pretty much the reason why we think that we should take over the country. And the native man says, well, you know what, I'll tell you another thing. This is how much neither red man nor white man knows. So basically there is always a lot what we don't know, and there is even more that we don't know that we don't know. And this is basically this double thing, like sort of, and I really believe that very often it is not what we don't know, but what we don't know that we don't know. Those are these, what is called the unknown unknowns. And since we have a little bit of time, let me try if I manage to play you. So you notice that people are laughing because, of course, it sounds a little bit strange, right? Especially when it was presented by Donald Rumsfeld, who wasn't the most popular among U.S. Politicians. But actually what he's saying has a very deep meaning. And a number of people recently start picking up on that and say, well, listen, why don't you also listen a little bit to him and start to think about it? Because this concept of unknown unknowns is an old concept known from military history and military science, which is like that it's not like that you expect something that it may happen and it either happens or it doesn't happen. This is not such a big problem, especially in operations like in military operations. The biggest problem in many situations in life is that something comes which you don't even expect that it may happen. And that can cause you a lot of trouble. So Rumsfeld says very correctly, this is a very serious and important matter. And actually, it is, as I said, it is a serious matter in all walks of life, among that also in speech communication. So to bring the topic of this workshop a little bit into picture, you know, we start with the speech, let me see if this works, and we end up with the meaning, but in the process of getting from speech signal to meaning, you have to get through sounds and you have to get into a message. And then you may extract the meaning from the message. And getting from signal to sound is called, automatically, it's called machine recognition of speech. That's what machine recognition of speech, as I understand it at least, pretty much is. Somebody speaks to a machine, and the machine transcribes what has been sent in the form of the message. And current recognizers, thanks actually to Fred Jelinek, who's been mentioned a number of times, and I take a liberty to do that too, nowadays this is overwhelmingly done by stochastic processes, stochastic recognition of speech, where the machine is powerless without the training data. So, and pretty much the training data becomes a part of the process if you think about it. But once you start thinking about it a little bit deeper, you realize that the reality to a machine is only that whatever happened since the machine was trained and to the point where machine is being used, you assume that world didn't change. That basically the training data are describing the real situation during a test. And we know that it may not always be the case, because you have these unknown unknowns in the machine. Namely, it can be data distortions, which you haven't seen in a training. Those become unknown unknowns to a machine. Machine has to deal with it somehow, but it's not trained. It doesn't expect it as unknown thing. Or it can be words which are not in the vocabulary of the recognizer, because they have a zero probability, has to be dealt with it somehow. And in general, this is a problem in any machine learning technique, right? I mean, the machine learning, recognizer is only as powerful as data on which it was trained. Of course, people very quickly realized that this is a problem, and over, I believe, 15, 20 years, there is a story that the machine should be adapting to a new situation somehow. Basically, you know that it may happen, that you couldn't cover everything in a training. You know, it's actually you realize it's impossible. The same thing is with the words which can come. I mean, you know, LVCSS is very powerful in creating new words from the old words, but it cannot create, in principle, it cannot create a word which it doesn't know it exists. You have to put it in the vocabulary of the recognizer, or you have to back up to other strategies. I'm not saying that this is not being dealt with. But one possible solution of dealing with these unknown unknowns is trying to adapt during a recognition. And adaptation should be unsupervised. Of course, you can do supervised adaptation, but this is not quite fair, right? You would like to be able to use data as they come without knowing what the data carry, and adapt to a new noises or adapt to a new words coming and so on and so on. The world was relatively safe until when we were using generative models. So one way of doing adaptation is that you take the data and you try to improve the likelihoods of the models on the data, meaning you change the model so that the likelihood of the data on unseen data improves. Recently, we start using much more non-generative models, discriminative models, neural networks. So there we have to figure out some alternative ways of doing so. You don't have a means and you don't have a variance. All we have is the boundaries between the classes, right? So what we are thinking about is that maybe such a recognizer can be adapted so that it gives us the results which still make sense in some sense. Essentially, I believe that when it comes to a human communication, what we do is that we try to decode the message until we feel that it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, you try to change your strategy. You can move closer, close the window, or walk away because the message doesn't make sense. So the similar strategy we are thinking about using in the recognizer. Question is, what is it that makes sense? This is, of course, you know, the crucial question here. How can we tell that the output of the classifier makes sense? One thing that we know, some characteristics of the output which we can expect. For instance, you can expect that consonants will be interleaved with vowels and so on, and the phonemes should have a certain length and so on and so on. To make it even simpler, this is one strategy which we are considering, is that we can look at output of the classifier, how it works on its training data, and then expect that during a test, it will have the characteristics which are similar what we have observed on the training data. So basic assumption here is your classifier will never work any better than it does on the data on which it was trained. And whatever characteristics of the output you observe on the training data, you should be observing in some aspects on the test data. So this is pretty much like a key thing. I forgot to mention, as I said, since the formalities are over and we are among ourselves, please do ask the questions. Do stop me if you feel that I'm making the stories here, because I'm looking for feedback from you as much as I try to preach you to you. I mean, you know, because preaching doesn't really help here, and this is a workshop, right? So you should say, well, that doesn't make sense. What do you mean? And so on and so on. And I, of course, may not have always the answer, but at least will make me think. So this is the basic trick. We would like to adapt the classifier. We don't know what the real message in the signal is, but we know it should have certain properties. We know we should be dealing with the speech, for instance. So we expect that things will, output of the classifier will be in some aspect different when the noise comes, especially when the unknown noise comes. It will become more clear because I have some more material later, of course. But this is something which we would like to go back. And if we are wrong here, tell us while there is a time. We can start working on something more useful, you know, over next 4 weeks. Okay. So and basically, here's the little block diagram which I carry around and show to many people. You have a training data, and you have a estimator, classifier, and classifier is giving you outputs, and you describe these outputs in some ways. And when the test data comes, you pretty much do the same thing. You describe it in a similar way, and you compare these two descriptions. And if they are similar, you know that classifier is, you assume that classifier is not doing such a bad job. But if these two, this comparison doesn't come out, doesn't come through very well, then you have a case, you have a reason to worry. Here we have a problem statement which we came up when we had a meeting or several months ago at Hopkins, discussing how is it that we wanted to make sure that we are all working towards some reasonable goal. So we agreed on this mission statement that given that you have a classifier which gives you every 10 milliseconds, say, description of the posterior probabilities of the speech sounds which are happening in this particular time, can you tell how good these estimates are without knowing what they are, of course? I mean, if you know what they are, then you report the error rate, right? But you cannot report the error rate because you don't know what the correct answer is. Of course, you do have your training data available. So if you believe that indeed the strategy of running your classifier on a training data and compare it to what happens on the test is a reasonable one, you can do that. We provide all this data. But your answer should be how good your estimate is without knowing what it is. Okay, so this is how our output looks like. It comes in the form of what is called posteriogram. Posteriogram is a little bit like a spectrogram. Here we have a time, I apologize, I realize I don't have an axis here. This is a time, and here you have a different phonemes, and the z-axis, the color, means how high the posterior probability of the given phoneme is at any given time. So this is, you can, those of you who speak Italian, you can read it immediately. Those you cannot, but know the alphabet, you can read it too. It's a due, tre, nove, sei, right? This is a sequence of, sequence of the posterior, I mean, phonemes which describe Italian digits. And your question is this answer good or is it bad? Because you don't know what people said. And the other thing is how quickly you can tell if it is good or bad. Because that's something in adaptation, it's also second important variable is how quickly you can adapt, how quickly you can, how much signal you need when it comes to description of, by any statistics, how quickly you can derive reliable statistics to tell if the answer is good or bad. So here I have a sort of made up two posteriograms. He could catch hair. And those of us who work with posteriograms, you know, sorry, it should be other way around, right? You can already told me that this is a mistake. This is, oh, sorry. This is a clean one, which is called noisy. This is a noisy one, which is called clean. Just to confuse you, I was wondering if you understand. I made a mistake, I'm sorry. So, because what happens is that in a clean signal, you see that posteriors change with a certain rhythm as the speech sounds change. And here, oops, I'm sorry, I'm not used to this machine. Here, the estimate is noisier because the classifier is not very certain what's going on, right? So this is basically what we are after to somehow describe. If we are seeing, if you look at the things, you know, this one is good, this one is bad. Now the question is how can we get a machine to tell the same thing? So one technique which we worked on a couple of years ago with Nima Mezgarani and my students was that we would be forming what is called autocorrelation, we call it autocorrelation matrix. Is essentially the sum of the outer products of these vectors of posteriors put in appropriately compressed so that they have a approximately normal distribution. And you can see this is what happens in a clean. You have a lot of estimates on the diagonal, meaning classifier is often confident with one answer, not so much going off. And when it comes to the noisy data, classifier is often giving you more than one high output. So it says it can be up, it can be also whatever, right? And so if you compare these two matrices, that can give you some idea if the classifier is doing well or not. So that was one of the early things which we worked on. It was a paper, I believe, in Interspeech some years ago. Here's another technique which Tetsuji Ogawa, who is sitting over there, was working on. He was just describing output of the classifier using the GMM, Gaussian mixture model. And then on the test data, he would be just looking what are the likelihoods of the model which was derived on the training data. If the likelihoods were high, then he says data is fine. If the likelihoods were low, he said data may be suspect. We may be dealing with the noise on which the classifier wasn't trained. The technique which currently is working, I would say best, is the following. It uses the fact that if you are dealing with speech, the posterior vectors should be changing with a certain speed. So here we have kind of cartoon of the whole situation. This is one phoneme, then it goes to another phoneme, or speech phoneme. Let's call it speech sounds. And what you do is that you measure the KL divergence between the posterior vectors in certain distance, delta I, and cumulate it over certain time. And so what happens if the distance between these posterior vectors is very small, they are very similar, so cumulative distance is low. As you go further and further, this cumulative distance is increasing up to the certain point. Here is the point where you are guaranteed to be in average in the centers of different speech sounds. What is interesting, then if you go further and further, at certain point, things do not change anymore because you are already 100% guaranteed that you are far away from the given center of the phoneme. And what is also interesting is that as you go and deal with noisier and noisier data, this maximum, this is where you are dealing with the distances which are large enough, is getting higher if the output is good, and is getting smaller and smaller because your data get contaminated by stationary noise, so your vectors become more similar in some ways. So this is a result derived on a lot of data, on whole training data. This is what you see if you just accumulate this distance over a single sentence. So, but still it's pretty much true if you are dealing, this is I think on some RETS data. So if we are dealing with a clean speech, things are, this stuff is high here, this is less, this is lower, and here we have a total garbage that was, we were not dealing with the speech, we were dealing with something which wasn't, on which the classifier wasn't trained, namely laughter. So on these curves, we try to use, to estimate how good the output is. Here we have a results, how long does it take? I mean, clearly, I mean, the longer you look, better it is. The picture somehow stabilizes into reasonable thing after about 8 seconds. Of course, but if you look longer, it's even better and better. We intend to evaluate our technique by looking at the correlation between measure which we are deriving and observed accuracy, phoneme accuracy, on a given part of speech. Here is one result, which is due to Vijay, here, who is here, where, you know, here we have, here we have one measure, and here we have the appropriately scaled error. So we are looking after the line which is as straight as possible, and we are looking for ellipses as narrow as possible, and derived from as little data as possible. Another technique which we just came up actually, or started working on last month, I spent, me and my students were working in Brno, Technical University, came up with, so far we were working on looking at the output of the classifier and we assumed this is what we are going to do. But another possibility which we are now looking at is that what happens if we, since we are now dealing what is called the deep neural networks for estimating the posterior probabilities, there is many things which are happening inside this network. So looking into the individual processing layers occurred to us that there may be some interesting information there, namely that situation may look better if the classifier is working with the data on which it was trained, and different when you are dealing with the data on which it wasn't trained. And we have some preliminary evidence this is indeed so. And this is one topic which we also intend to investigate during next month. What we will have here is that we brought with us estimates from 31 processing streams, which were derived by various band limiting of the input signal and corrupting the things with the noise. So these 31 streams are were trained on clean signal and also on signal which was corrupted by random noise. We picked up one type of the noise, so this is subway noise. And we also have a test results, which were derived on different other noises with different noise levels. And we also have, at the same time, we have estimates of the posterior probabilities, of the probabilities of the phonemes in each sentence. So this is the material which we brought with us, and this, so that we don't have to, unless necessary, run any recognition experiments. We just deal with the outputs of the classifier and see how far we can get with that. Since I have a little bit of time, right? How much time do I have? Oh, good. So this is something which is not part of the mission, but I want to convince you that things can be actually useful for various reasons. Obviously, I mean, adaptation is useful in general. Being able to tell if the classifier is good or bad is good in general. But I have to admit I have selfish motives, because for a long time we are working on techniques which are called the multi-stream recognition of speech. In multi-stream recognition of speech, we assume that the signal is being processed by number of three parallel streams. These parallel streams can be derived in various ways. They can have a different signal processing techniques, but also they can have a different strengths of the prior assumptions. Difference is strengths of the language model. So in general, this is the as general as I can get. So you start with the signal, you do analysis, form your streams. If possible, the streams should be independent, conditionally independent. And then you get the results. And then we have this what I call performance monitoring, which basically is what we are going to work on here while we are here. And then this performance monitoring may allow you to leave out the streams which get corrupted by noise or by some ways, or get corrupted by dealing with the item which is not in a vocabulary of the recognizer. So assumption here is information is coded in number of redundant dimensions, and you hope that not all dimensions get corrupted at the same time. You sort of hope that some of them may be still remaining good. And you form the streams in different perceptual modalities, different processing channels. Perception modalities may be that some of the modalities are audio, some of them may be visual in general or whatever. Then there are different processing channels in each modality. And there are channels, some of them are bottom-up dominated, some of them are top-down dominated. And the performance monitor is capable of telling which ones of these streams you should keep for further processing and which one you should alleviate. So this is the whole story. It is motivated by number of observations which has been observed over the almost a century. Again, acoustics, what has been observed in recognition of high entropy speech sounds, that probability of the error in the subbands, the probability of the error in a full band speech is given by the product of probabilities of the errors in a narrow streams of a signal. And you can already know if you look at this formula, what is the attractive thing about this formula. As long as one of the streams has a very low probability, imagine that one stream is probability zero, you don't have to worry about the other streams at all because you are already getting errorless signal at the output and regardless. So, and it has been observed not only in acoustic processing, but it also has been observed in recognition of words in and out context. So this appears to be some of the principal way how the humans are processing information. You basically look at different aspects of the signal, and as long as one of the aspects is telling you reliably what the message is, then this is what you pick up and you ignore everything else. Obviously, what it requires is what we are looking after. So this is, we have to be able to reliably estimate if one of the channel is giving you good information. Otherwise, this formula doesn't work. To convince you that this is so, I mean, I have a little bit of a cartoon for kids. Here we have a situation where two people are shooting at the same bird, and Sanjeev, tell me if I, keep me honest if I'm wrong, probability of the miss is given by probabilities, how good, probabilities of errors of these individual shooters. Of course, the situation is good. Well, situation is bad for the bird, but it's actually this one holds from the point of view of the bird. Bird knows if it got hit or not. If you are observer, this is not so, right? Because observer has a false positives and false negatives. You don't know for sure if the bird got hit. So that's why this formula doesn't hold. So what we are looking after is sort of somehow to get close to what the bird sees, right? So what we have here is that the result of the experiment, typical experiment where people have to tell if the thing is red or blue. So what you see here, I mean, this is a kind of psychology 101, that you go from certain red. Oh, sorry, I'm terribly sorry for this. Oh boy, what did I do? Yeah, from certain red, right, to certain blue. But there is a period where you don't know. Basically, you are not certain. So this is where the errors happen. But if you can introduce the third class, which is like I'm not sure, then of course you can deal with this part of the situation. You, of course, do still make error because you said, I don't know. But you don't make these terrible errors like telling something when it is not another way around. And indeed, this is happening in human. I mean, this is one thing which I picked up kind of in random from the literature I don't know much about, which is like metacognitive processes in human perception. You can see people were asked if the picture is a sparse or dense, and oops, I'm terribly sorry, this is a terrible thing. And so they were judging sparse, they were judging dense, but if they get the opportunity to say, I'm not sure, they would use it quite heavily, right? And the experiment was set up that they were awarded for also saying not sure, because maybe if, you know, they didn't get punished or whatever, or they got a tiny little award if they said no sure, and sort of thing. But the same thing has been observed in higher animals, in monkeys, in dolphins, even somebody's telling me in rats. And so that's why we are making friends with a lot of cognitive science people, because we are very interested to what extent we can emulate something like that in human perception. And this is the whole story what we want to work on this summer and maybe over. It works to some extent if in a real system, and this is the last slide which I want to show you really. So we had these different processing streams, the 31 streams. Then we put on the performance monitor. That was the one which was using these differences between posterior vectors in certain distance. And we were picking up the best streams, averaging about 10 best streams. And this is how it worked. So conventional recognizer, single stream recognizer gives you about 30% error. This is kind of what you can expect from a simple timid recognizer. The proposed technique, where we were leaving some of the streams, even on a clean speech, was doing better. If we knew which streams to pick up from 31, basically, this is cheating, of course, we would go down to 25%. So somewhere in between, we are already somewhere in between 31, which normal recognizer gives us, and 25, which a recognizer which we were cheating would give us. When it came to signal which was corrupted by noise, conventional recognizer, of course, gets much worse. If we were able to pick up the best streams by hand, we would go down to 35, basically leaving out the streams which were most corrupted by the noise, but when we knew which streams we should leave out, because we knew how well the recognizer works. But our proposed techniques with performance monitoring was somewhere actually better than half, right? I mean, closer to what we would pick up by hand. So this is admitted. I mean, one of the good results which we are showing, because this is the beginning of the workshop, and we want to sort of give people hope that we'll get somewhere, right? And we still need to deal with the situations where we train a classifier on multi-style training and so on and so on. But I think that there is some hope to succeed. And I hope that I convinced you, because since none of you were complaining, I hope that I convinced you that our approach is not entirely ridiculous. It should be a little bit ridiculous, it's okay, because this is a summer workshop, right? And this is how you get the good stuff happening. So you need to be a little bit crazy here. But this is something, you know, we work on for several years already. I'm very, very, very happy that we could put together the team of people who can correct us and fix what we were doing wrong. Thank you very much.